ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
This session, which will continue this afternoon, is based on a list of questions from Savyasachi Prabhu. I'll speak in English. There won't be any translation, unless someone wants to do it in the corner. Before we get to Savyasachi's questions, I'll reply first to a query which came on the Ask BVKS, which is a new program that people send a question on the internet or whatever, and I'm supposed to answer it if I want to. Well, the first question that came, it's already answered in a lecture of mine. And the second question that came is about Kashi Yatra and taking sand and water from, you walk from, or nowadays go by train, from Kashi to Rameshwaram, and then you bring some water and sand, and then you bathe with water from Rameshwaram, you bathe Vishwanath in Kashi, something like that. I was asked about the significance. The answer is, I don't know. It's got no direct, it's even difficult to find any indirect relationship to Krishna consciousness. It won't help you, knowing or not knowing won't make any difference to our life in Krishna consciousness. So it's better that questions on this, you can send this to Mahatabha if you want, but the question should be that are relevant to advancement in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise there are so many questions you could ask that. What are the significance of the different yatras to Kedarnath and so many things. But we want to concentrate on Krishna consciousness. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited both Rameshwaram and Varanasi. So, I've also visited. We're not against going to these places, but all these different rituals, they have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Some of them do. It's just like we find in the Bhagavatam. I think anyone who's read Srimad Bhagavatam, they can understand that this question is not worth asking, because at the beginning of Bhagavatam, we find the sages at Naimisharanya, they ask, they tell Suta Goswami that you've studied all the different shastras. You know, you'll probably find the answer to this question in some Purana. So Suta Goswami, he spoke so many Puranas, not only Bhagavat Purana, but then the sages asked him that, well, you know, you've studied so many things, now tell us about the really important thing that can help us, especially in the age of Kali, people, prayana payusha sabhya kalavasvin yugejanaha. Mandasu manda matayo manda bhagyahi upadruta. People in this iron age of Kali mostly have short lives. They're stupid. They're of bad mentality. They're unlucky. Their minds are always disturbed. So what is it that's going to help them? So the reply was not to go from Kashi to Rameshwaram and bring some water and bring it back. And that definitely wasn't the reply. Yad Krishna San Krishna. The question which is in relation to Krishna. So indirectly everything's in relation to Krishna, but we're interested in what's directly in relationship with Krishna. Due to being indirect, we're all in this material world. Yayatamam prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajamiha. Namavat manuvartante manusha parta sarvashaha. Everything's in relation to Krishna, directly or indirectly, but indirectly we remain in the material world, including however many times you go from Kashi to Rameshwaram and back, you're still going to be in the material world. It's not going to take you. Of course, if you die in Kashi, then Lord Shiva will come and shout Ram in your ear. So that's the advantage. Better stay in Kashi. But we chant Ram Ram all the time. So, last time I was here, Savyasachi Prabhu told me, or was telling me, as they say in Indian English, he told me that he had asked, he had asked an old man in a village who had seen it in his childhood about drawing water from the ground using bulls, and the man became angry at him. He said, why do you want to do that if you can just press a switch? Why do you want to go through so much trouble? I thought a bit about that. It would probably be difficult for him to understand why we want to do that, but he's thinking you save the trouble, but you have to buy the pump. You have to maintain it. You have to put fuel in it. And once you start having machines, you have to pay for all of it. That means that the amount of food you produced previously isn't enough. You enter the money economy. Then you have to buy so many things. You have to have a moped to go into town to buy different parts for the machines. And he's thinking that you save work, but actually you increase your work because you have to grow more. And then you have to use fertilizers and pesticides to try to increase the crop, and you enter the money economy, which is full of anxiety. And you have to take loans to do all this, and if your crops fail, then you're in a big problem. And then instead of putting the pesticides on the ground, you put it down your throat so many times. Almost 20,000 last year, farmers. Suicides, recorded suicides. No one cares. It wasn't even the top item in the news. It's like a genocide that actually these companies and the government, they think they're doing good, but they're killing the farmers. And no, it's not a political issue. They don't care. People don't care. They think, well, we have to make progress by getting all the farmers off the land, probably pleased. Then the farmers leave the land, and then they take over the land and spoil it all. So it's difficult for people to understand this. They just say, press the button, and that's it. That's your job done. Meanwhile, you have to kill the bulls because there's no work for them to do, and you make so much a karmic reaction. So they just see pressing the button. They don't see the whole chain of ugra karma behind it. And the fact that we want to make these farm projects, actually our aim is not farming. Our aim is chanting Hare Krishna. Our aim is to remember Krishna. But it makes a conducive atmosphere for that. And also the protecting the cows and bulls, that is central to Krishna consciousness, which is killed by pressing the button. Then you enter impious life, ugra karmic life. Whereas with the cows and bulls, that's automatically sattvic and pious. So these points, they'll have to be preached again and again to our own devotees also, who find it very difficult to understand. Why should we do this? And press the button. What's the problem? You don't see behind that little button, you're tied into this material world. Just like the bulls are tied, you have to walk behind them all day. Just so they keep walking to pull the water. Okay, I'll now take these questions. From Savyasachi Prabhu. You could learn English grammar. Suggested. Does material piety and impiety affect, not affects, a person's acceptance and execution of devotional service? Jaiva Dharma seems to conclude no, but Bhagavad Gita verses Yeshang Twantagatam Pa Pam Jananang Punya Karmanam Te Dwanga Mahanya Mukta Bhajante Mang Duravrataha. And 7:15. Kamang Dushkrishno Murha Prapadyante Naradhamaha Mayapahrita Jnana Asuram Brahmashrita. These verses seem to say that piety is required to take to Krishna consciousness. One verse says that those who are pious, and some other conditions also, they can take to Krishna consciousness seriously. And the other one says that those who are impious, they don't surrender to me. And then we have another verse, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam yadi katopi labhyate. Tatram lolyam api mulyam ekalam janma koti sukritaya na labhyate. How can Krishna consciousness be attained? By greed to attain it. Not by pious activities performed in many millions of lifetimes. So what is the samanvaya, or the harmonizing of these apparently contradictory statements? First of all, we should understand that different words, they take on different meanings according to different contexts. That's why we have to understand the purpose of Shastra, and then everything can be... All the acharyas do that. They explain what is the prayojan. They may not use that term. And then they sister or harmonize all the Shastric statements around that. Just like Shankaracharya says that the purpose of Shastra is to understand that it's all meaningless. Everything's Maya, except Brahman, which you can't describe. Therefore the Vedas are stupid, because it can't be described. So what is it describing? Anyway, and that's not exactly what Shankaracharya says. That's an extrapolation of his stupid philosophy. Anyway, his idea is that there's only the one impersonal Brahman, and all the Vedic statements there he interprets, or he sees harmony within all of them. But then to come to that conclusion, what is that? Sarve Veda Yatpadam Amananti. All the Vedas declare this. Kasmin Vigyatam. What is that? Kasmin Vigyatam Idam Sarvam Etam Jan Vigyatam Bhavati. What is it by that, by knowing which everything is known? So they all do it, and then Ramanuja gives his understanding, this is how it should be, and then they explain all the Vedic statements in terms of what they consider to be the goal, and then that Siddhanta, everything is explained in terms of that. So, the words Punya, Sukriti, Dushkriti, these words have different meanings according to different contexts. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur described that there is Bhogonmukhi Sukriti, pious activities which are conducive for enjoying the material world, for getting punya by which one enjoys the material world. Then there's mokshanmukhi sukriti. That's this kashi yatra. That's more concerned with the moksha. Or in Gujarat, what is that? Surat Mar Gadi? Kashima.
Kashi no Maran.
Surat no Jaman.
Jaman. Kashi no Maran. Surat ma Jaman. So enjoy Jaman with some kind of food in Surat. And then when it's time to die, they have now the one train starts in Surat and goes to Kashi. That's the Tapti Ganga Express, is it? And then you die there. Have it all planned out. Of course, Maya's plans don't always fit our plans, usually don't. So, yeah, that's why we're not much interested in all this Kashi Yatra, because it's nothing conducive for bhakti there. There's Mokshan Mukhi Sukriti and Bhaktian Mukhi Sukriti. Which are various preliminary pious activities which prepare one for enjoying the material world, getting liberation from the material world, and attaining pure devotional service to Krishna. And they may be the same activities, but it's the mentality that one does it in makes a difference. So, does material impiety and impiety affect a person's acceptance and execution of devotional service? No. It's a resounding no. Janma koti sukritaya na labhyate. One can. Pure devotional service to Krishna is not by pious activities. But, then you may say, well, what difference does it make? And then, what's the difference between being a sinner or a pious person? But I've explained this point actually many times. The Vedic system of whatever it is, karma kanda, performing pious activities, respecting Govinda, Gau, Ganga, this is all pious activities which are executed on the material platform. Generally people do on the material platform. They think if we serve the cow, then I'll get some punya and I'll enjoy myself in a future life. That's true. But all this comes to fruition if one comes in contact with a devotee of Krishna. Particularly if one comes in contact with a devotee and gets the proper understanding, which one is more likely to do if one is predisposed towards sadhus. If you're predisposed towards killing sadhus, as around the time of the Babri Masjid destruction, there are many riots, and at that time we used to hear that certain minority community, as they're euphemistically referred to in India, they were. Certain members of that community thought that you'll get extra punya by killing sadhus. And they like to kill cows, some of them. Deliberately kill cows to enrage Hindus. Because nowadays the Hindus are killing cows also. So if one is a Hindu, one is more likely to accept Krishna consciousness. We see that. So they still have to come in contact with a devotee to do this. Many years ago in Bangladesh, one Hindu social worker, we were fairly new there, we were going around doing programs. One Hindu social worker came and said, oh, it's very good that you're going around and doing this preaching. And wherever you go, the tendency for people to convert to Christianity, which is very prominent at that time, that stopped to Christianity and Islam. So then we teased him a bit. We said, well, what's the harm if they become a Christian? You see? At least they'll go to church once a week. The Hindus, they don't go to church. They don't go to the temple once a week. The Hindus are eating flesh and the Christians are eating flesh. So, you know, what's the big difference? And so he gave all these reasons. And eventually he said, well, if they are Hindus, they're more likely to say the name, have faith in the name of Gauranga, than we accepted that. So, So material piety and impiety don't directly affect one's taking to Krishna consciousness, but it prepares one. It makes a more favorable situation by which one is more likely to accept Krishna consciousness. And also, the fact that Krishna is central in Vedic culture. Krishna, Rama, Vishnu, as Yageshwara, in Vedic culture, people, the Yagyas, they are central to Vedic culture, and Yageshwara is Vishnu. So we find that even here in South India, even today, that many Shaivas, they also, well, mostly retired Brahmins, but they'll daily chant Vishnu Sahasranam. It's just part of what they do. So they don't have the same faith in, or the same understanding of Vishnu as the Vaishnavas do, but you'll see, I've seen in temples in the evening, you'll find Iyengars and Iyers, all mostly retired government workers, they're both sitting together and chanting Vishnu Sahasranam. So that gives a predisposition towards Krishna Bhakti, and then even chanting the names of Vishnu, even with a defective mentality, that one may be doing for the sake of material piety, but then when one comes in contact with a devotee, then you can get the proper understanding. So, looking after cows can be a mundane piety, or it can be done specifically for the sake of Krishna, pleasing Krishna. Yad karoshi, yad ashnasi, yad juhoshi, dadasi, yad yattapasisi, kaunteya, tad karushma madarpanam. If it's done consciously with the idea of pleasing Krishna, then it becomes bhakti. Chanting the name of Krishna is central to bhakti. One doesn't necessarily get the result of bhakti. One can do it for mundane piety also. So the Vedic culture becomes complete in contact with the Vaishnava. Or even if one has the idea of mundane piety and he sees a sadhu, that in Vedic culture one should worship the Brahmanas. So if one worships even a devotee of Krishna, even for mundane reasons, still that gives that bhakti, unmukhi sukriti, just the contact with devotees, gives the people their inclination toward Krishna will start to be aroused. There's one anecdote which I saw recently on these DVDs told by our godbrother Rajendra Nandan. Actually, I have a feeling his name should be Vrajendra Nandan, but anyway, he's known as Rajendra Nandan. That there was this Santana Gopal, Santana Krishna. He was the priest who was called, I believe, from Bangalore for doing the installation of Radha Madan Mohan in ISKCON Hyderabad. And Prabhupada, he appreciated, he said to his group, he said, "You're real Brahmanas." So he later came to know that Srila Prabhupada had in some temples in Vrindavan and in Bombay also is planned, and it was eventually done after the installation was done shortly after Prabhupada left this world, that there would be deities of Srila Prabhupada worshipped on the altar, and he came personally to see Srila Prabhupada and tell him that, and he quoted so many shastras, that if this is done in your lifetime, you have to accept so much reaction from people. And Prabhupada said, and he wanted to dissuade Prabhupada because he thought that this would be, injurious to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, that is what I have come for." So, Is that all right? That gives it all. I have discussed this point many times, actually. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 3. Oh, I didn't bring my Bhagavad Gita. Can you bring it? Recommend cessation of action for one on the Yoga Rudha stage. But in the 18th chapter, Lord Krishna says that no one should give up his nitya karma. Indeed, he says it is impossible to remain inactive. How to reconcile? Is it correct that a jnani can attain liberation while continuing to perform nishkam karma yoga, but an ashtanga yogi has necessarily to give it up? What is that? Shama Karana Muchate. Yeah, again, these words have to be understood in proper context. Krishna says not part. The whole concept of inaction, giving up work, Arjuna seemed to be quite confused about this. Again and again he asked Krishna about this. No, that's not Shama Karana Mucha. There comes another verse. Aru Ruksha Maner Yogam Karma Karana Muchate Yoga Rudhasya Tasya Eva Shama Karana Muchate. For one who is a neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. Yeah, Arjuna seemed to be quite confused about all this. He kept on asking throughout the Bhagavad Gita. He didn't seem to quite get it. This whole point about inaction, action and inaction. And that's also promoted by Shankara giving up work. In Bhagavad Gita later, Krishna says this, anishtan nishtan vishramta trividhak karmana palam bhavatyat karmenam preta natu sanyasinam kuchit, that everyone has to get the results of their work, favorable, unfavorable, or mixed, except a sannyasi. So, in Shankara's philosophy, to get the perfection of life, you have to take sannyas. And Arjuna's quite confused about all this. You know, what is sannyas? And giving up work. Now, interestingly, this is, of course, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita before Shankara appeared in this world. And Arjuna, he obviously had some understanding of what we call the Upanishadic philosophy to even ask these questions or even to understand these concepts. So, he must have heard all these things previously, but he was confused about it. Now, it's interesting, it seems if you read the Upanishads, or if you actually read, we say that, well, nowadays we all actually hearing. There was no reading at that time. Arjuna never read any Upanishads. It was considered sinful even to write them. They're only to be heard. Shruti is only to be heard. Putting in writing is, traditionally that's considered sinful. The Upanishads, they're all Shruti. It's supposed to be heard, spoken and heard. So if you take it at face value, it seems to promote this very idea of giving up the world, not working in the Vedas, that's mostly, they recommend this pushpitambacham, flowery words, go to heaven, enjoy. With the Upanishads, it's all maya, it's all nonsense. So we don't find directly in the Upanishads what's Krishna. He makes the in Bhagavad Gita, of course, that's sometimes called Gita Upanishad, although it's not called an Upanishad, but it's not included in the what we might call the traditional Upanishads. But it's unique in as much as Krishna gives this Siddhanta of all of this. Should you work in this world? Or should you give up work? And Krishna says, no, you work, but for a completely different purpose than either the karmis or the jnanis are thinking about. That means we have the purva mimamsa, the karmis. They work, they're following the Vedic culture to go to the heavenly planets, enjoy, and uttara mimamsa, that no, this world is all maya. And Krishna gives a different understanding. They live in this world, work in this world, but for the sake of pleasing Krishna. So when Krishna speaks all these different things about yogis and karmis performing sacrifices, it all, again, it has to be understood in relation to what Krishna is teaching Arjuna. Not everything is meant for Arjuna, everything's meant for everybody. This whole sixth chapter, Krishna describes all of this. So Arjuna, are you interested in being a yogi? Huh? You want to go and go to the forest and be a yogi? Okay, well, this is what you have to do. And Arjuna himself really, Krishna explains it, and Arjuna himself really, I can't do that. Krishna knows he can't do it. He explained it to him, and then you can't. And then at the end of the chapter, and anyway, you just worship me. And you don't need to do all of that. So it's like, this is what you do, this is what you do. Oh, can't do that. Alright, never mind, doesn't matter. Okay, forget that. Alright, now we covered karma and jnana, and let's get on to into the seventh chapter, and then we'll talk about maya sakta marah parta yogam yunjan vadashaya sangshayam samagramam yata gyasisi tachrina. Okay, now you listen to, now this is what you should, now I'm going to skip what you should really listen to. All that yoga, karma, all that stuff, forget all of that. No. You're interested in that? Okay, forget all that, and now let's talk about me. It's the real thing we should talk about. It's what you should really listen to. So, how to reconcile this? There's no need to reconcile it. It's not that every instruction is meant for everyone. Someone's doing this yoga process. They're in a different process to those who are karmis. So it's one instruction for one, another instruction for another. When he says it's impossible to remain inactive, that doesn't mean that no one should renounce the world. He's just saying the whole idea of stopping activity so you don't make any karmic reaction. Krishna says, by saying that you can't not do work even for a moment, he's bring Arjuna to have a deeper understanding of what is meant by karma. It doesn't just mean like physically doing something, but it means the mentality in which you do it. And therefore, yagyartat karmanaha. One should perform work for the sake of yagya. Or yadkaroshi madash, more specifically, yagya means Vishnu. Many years ago, I was in the house of a lawyer in Malaysia, a Keralite lawyer, who she said, she Mahadevi, she said that, when I read your Prabhupada's Gita, I thought he's being sectarian and saying Yagya means Vishnu. I thought he was just twisting it. Then she said, I read Shankara's Bhagavad Gita commentary. He said the same thing. Yagya means Vishnu. And then she accepted. She could have accepted Prabhupada. She thought Shankara was more authoritative. Prabhupada quotes, Yagya vai Vishnu. Yagya means Vishnu. So, again, everything has to be understood in context. That's why we need it. We need Bhagavad Gita and all Shastras to be explained. Otherwise, we can't understand it. It's therefore, Krishna says, Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva-darshana. One who can see the tattva, that which is, they can explain all these things. Otherwise, it's not possible to understand. You'll definitely get confused if we try to. One devotee told me that he's distributing books in America, and he meets people after some time. Often he meets people. They said, "Oh, that Bhagavad Gita I gave you, did you read it?" And they either say no, or they say yeah, but many times they say, "I just read the verses, but not the purports, because I don't want anyone else to explain it to me. I'll just get my own understanding." Of course, Krishna himself is speaking. You're taking someone else's understanding. But this idea, you can just understand it by yourself. Arjuna understood it by himself, but Shankara didn't understand it. Dr. Radhakrishnan didn't understand it. Gandhi didn't understand it. Tilak didn't understand it. They all missed it. So it needs to be explained by one. And the way Prabhupada has explained it, it is as it is. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam yetha dutama. You can understand it, Arjuna, because you're a devotee. That's your qualification. Otherwise, there are so many others. Bhishma was there. He was much more learned than Arjuna. Vyasadeva was present in the world. But Krishna explained Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna because he's a devotee. He can understand it. Others can't understand it. People are not devotees. They just have a different way of thinking altogether. They can't, even with, it turns out, even people who are devotees and then they go away and then it's like they've got this big rock over their hearts, like covering the cave, there's the big rock and you just can't, they won't, they've got this thing that I'm not gonna do bhakti anymore. And they can only see everything bad. They were associating with devotees before, but then they got upset, or they got some material desires, or they'll blame someone didn't behave with me properly, or this and that. But actually, it's just their own strong unwillingness to serve Krishna, and it's always someone else's fault. It's never their own. You know, this one didn't, he treated me badly. Didn't do. They're not behaving properly. This, that, the other. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That doesn't change. Because someone shouted at you or something, doesn't change the fact. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're all His eternal servants. If someone mistreats you, that doesn't change that. Mistreat, what does it mean, mistreat, anyway? Actually, if you think you're mistreated, that's itself an exhibition of egoism. So, and then they can't understand. You can talk to them day and night, Bhagavad Gita. And they can't hear it because they've made a decision. Matien na Krishna, paratasvato. They've made a decision. That's it. I'm not going to serve Krishna anymore. They're gone. Their worldly prestige or desires for sense gratification, even if they're extremely petty, may not even be gross sense gratification. Just this sense, they may not even be grossly sense gratifying, they may just the sense of being sent, not having to surrender to Krishna, overwhelms their consciousness. We've seen so many devotees, isn't it? People who've been in Krishna consciousness, and they go away, and it's like there's nothing you can do to them, there's nothing you can say, or they're just like, they've made a decision that I'm not going to serve Krishna, all devotees are wrong. Or actually, it's all right, but devotees are good. But still, I'm not going to say that. There's no logic or reason or philosophy. It's just completely closed. It's like trying to preach to a fanatical Christian or something. They're just gone. So, yeah, Krishna's speaking about the yoga process, and he speaks about other processes, and there's completely different attitude in the performing one's work, and then when one takes sannyas, he's renounces this world to perform yoga, then his duties change. That's why we have in the beginning of the sutra, anashita karma phalam kayam karma karotiha yaha sasanyasi cha yogi cha nani ragnena chakriya. A sannyasi, he gives up fire. He's not supposed to have any contact with fire, because fire is in the pious karmis. They have fire for fire sacrifice. For cooking, the fire has to be burning constantly in their home. But the sannyasi has no contact with fire. And nanyaragne nachakriya, and various ritualistic activities one is supposed to perform, sannyasi doesn't perform them. It's different duty. Once you take that step, then you have a different duty. So if a sannyasi does what a householder does, then that's improper. If a householder does what a sannyasi does, that's improper. In Shastra it's said that if a husband does not approach his wife at the time when she is at the appropriate time for impregnating her for children, that's sinful. For a sannyasi to go anywhere near a woman is sinful. For a householder not to impregnate his wife, these are all different rules of Shastra. So different people have different duties to perform. Krishna discusses many of them in Bhagavad Gita, or at least gives an overview of some of them. So they're not for harmonizing. The harmony is savadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. And ultimately all these things. Performing ritualistic activities or not performing them, taking sannyas, all that also doesn't have any ultimate value unless one comes to the point of surrendering to Krishna. Is it correct that a jnani can attain liberation while continuing to perform nishkarm karma yoga? An ashtanga yogi necessarily has to give it up. Yeah, ashtanga yoga is a different process altogether. Reference, Sri Chaitanya Shikha. Yeah. More question about this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Srimad, in Bhagavad Gita there is a direct process and there is an indirect process which is being referred.
Direct process and indirect process in Bhagavad Gita. Well, the karma, jnana and yoga in Bhagavad Gita, they're indirect process. Well, this question comes later, doesn't it?
No.
It's in here. Indirect process. Well, the real process is bhakti.
Yes.
The other processes, they're ultimately, they don't really help one that much unless one comes to the point of Krishna consciousness. But I think this question comes someday.
I don't know why I'm asking.
Comes up later.
That in up to sixth chapter, Lord Krishna is explaining the gradual process of advancement. Mm. In that, this shloka comes that one has to give up. Those who are not in that process, at one stage they have to give up their karma. Then the 18th chapter, for them who are following the indirect process, Krishna says that for sannyasi also nitya karma has to be performed. So therefore this...
I see. Well, a sannyasi, his duties are different. He has duties to perform. Okay. Not that taking sannyasi means you have no duties to perform. But he has different duties to perform. So taking sannyas means you just do whatever you like. There are strict rules for sannyasis. But they're different rules to those of householders. What's that verse? There's that, famously, Prabhupada often used to quote that yagya dana tapa karma, what is that? Nyatyajam pavanani manisha. Twice it comes up at the beginning of the 18th chapter. Yagya dana tapas chaiva pavanani manishinam. That they should never be given up in any stage of life. But for a sannyasi, he won't perform the fire sacrifice. So exactly what yajna means in this context, that has to be seen. We'll have to see what the acharyas say about that. But the essence of yajna is offering to Vishnu. So he may offer he's offering his life, his lifer, whatever it may be. Is it a right conclusion that verses 1866, 11:20:19, what's that? Devarshi Bhutapta Nirnam Pitrinam, and 11:11:37, what's that? I must say, I must admit. Anyway, you gave the book for that purpose. Let's look it up. Sri Chaitanya Shikamrita, 103. It's just that all these questions, it's just a matter of understanding understanding in context. 135. Yeah, exactly here it's written. On deeply analyzing the matter, it will be this from Chaitanya Shikamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It will be found that there is a great conceptual difference between the rules of material naitic dharma. Naitic? Oh, I guess that means, yeah. With its nitya karmas, with its motivated worship, and the rules of spiritual dharma that advocate constant selfless dedication to the Lord. This difference is not a difference in activity or ritual, but rather a difference in consciousness. That's the point I was just making. So, the verses aren't quoted there either. You want to look those up? 11:20:19 and 11... Can you look up 11:20:19? And you can look up 11:11:37. No, Srimad Bhagavatam. What have you got there?
11:20:19.
I must admit, I didn't prepare myself. What is that? What have you got?
11:37.
Yeah, what is it?
Yatra Bali Vidhanam Cha Sarva Varsik Parvasu Vaidiki Tantriki Diksha Madhyayvatra Dharanam.
Is this the verse you want?
11:11:37.
Seem to have the wrong numbers. Anyway, there are well known verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. Devarshi Bhutaptam Rinam Pitrinam Nakinkaro Naimani Charajam Sarvat. Sarvat. Savatmana yasharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parihritya kartam. That one who's fully surrendered to Krishna, he has no more debts to the devas, to ordinary living beings, to family members, to the rishis, or to the forefathers. And then there's the is that one you had in mind? Chakvasvatamam charnam bhujamara bhajam na pakvo tapatatato yati yatra kvava bhadra bhuda mushaki Kamvata arto bhajatam sridhamata. What does it gain a person if he follows all the duties of Varnashram but doesn't worship Krishna? But you don't lose anything if you try to worship Krishna and you're not fully successful in doing it. So there's also that tapasam tatakim. What is that? Aradito yadi haris tapasata takim. Naradito yadi haris tapasata takim. That if one performs austerities, but if one is worshipping Hari, then there's no need to perform austerities. And if you don't worship Hari, then what's the use of performing austerities? Refer to giving up karma, jnana and yoga and not the following of varnashram duties which are favorable to execute by devotional service. As long as the body is there, we're not completely detached from it. Following some varnashram duties are inevitable, but such activities performed by a sadhak are not in the category of karma since there's no attachment to perform them except the consideration of their being favorable to devotional service. Well, that we just read from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that the activities may be the same but the consciousness is different. One performs varnashram duties inasmuch as a devotee performs them, inasmuch as they're favorable for bhakti. Not more. There's that lokiki vaidiki chaiva. Look that up. Lokiki vaidiki. Devotee, he follows traditional rules and Vedic rules as much as they are conducive for devotional service. What is it? Lokiki vaidiki chaiva?
Lokiki vaidiki vapi.
Vapi.
Kriya kriyate mune hari sevanu kuleva satra karya bhuttim chita.
Yeah, what's the translation?
A devotee may act as an ordinary human being or as a strict follower of Vedic injunctions. In either case, everything he does is favorable for the advancement of devotional service because he is in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so lokiki, one may follow traditional or social rules or Vedic rules as much as they're conducive for Krishna consciousness. That's all. But generally, yeah, it's recommended to follow one's position in Varnashram because one does have a position in society. Of course, the yogi who goes to the forest, he leaves society, but then he enters yogi society and he has rules to follow. There also, among the yogis, there are how to deal with different people. And if the yogi meets people from the broader society, either by going into this village or if people come to him, then you have to relate with people, behave with people. Generally one will perform one's duty one will continue with his lifestyle because that is conducive. The Varnashram system in general is a way of life that is conducive for, at least we could say, religious activities. And there's mundane religion and spiritual religion. So by performing one's Varnashram duty, that one goes on with one's life and worships Krishna. So it may be given up if it's unfavorable. If it's obstructive to one's Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, one can remain in that. Now, often people ask about that. They say, "Well, that's the loudspeaker again." They say, well, you can go on with your job. Actually, in most cases, people may have to. But actually, this modern society, the jobs and all this, it's destructive to the soul. And it makes people impious. The whole way of life in the modern world, it just makes people impious. We practically see that. In Russia, what it was before and what it is now, because the modern way of life has come, and you must have seen, right? Bulat, since the glasnost and perestroika and McDonald's has come to Russia, now Russia has at last become a civilized country. Now you have McDonald's. What's that street coming up? There's a huge McDonald's on the corner. We do Harinam there. There's a famous street. It's called, not the Arbok. Yeah. Tverskaya, is it? Tverskaya, the road to Tver. There's a huge McDonald's on the corner. So, I mean, you can see how people have changed by this culture. Especially Moscow, as people have become extremely selfish and materialistic. Which, in Russia, people didn't used to be materialistic because there was nothing material to get. You couldn't be greedy because there was nothing to be greedy about. I mean, a few people might get a smuggled pair of Levi jeans. That's about the best you could hope for. But there weren't all these things to buy. So people went on fairly simply. But now they've brought in all the material desires. Buy this, buy that. So people's mentality has changed, and not for the better. So we can see that the modern materialistic society, I mean, even from a social point of view, it spoils people. I'm not saying that communism was so wonderful. But actually, the Vedic philosophy it's closer to communism than this capitalism. The motto of communism is everyone works according to their capacity and takes according to their need. Whereas in the modern or the capitalism, whatever you want to call it, it's might makes right, exploitation. There was among the videos I think you gave me was one of them about the, what was it called, the horrors of communism or something. I didn't watch it because I didn't have the right device to. What was it called? The horrors of communism or the violence of communism or something like that. But you could just as well make it, and you know, definitely under Stalin and Castro, and there's so many bad things done, but you can make the same thing about the capitalism also. It's just a propaganda film to say that communism is bad. Better stop talking about this like this, otherwise they won't let me into America next time I go. If you're pro-communist in America, that's like the worst thing. But what was the point I was making? That modern society is, this communism is godless communism, but the Varnashram system is a system based on cooperation rather than competition. But it has a higher purpose of life. Marxist communism is based, the goal is ahara nidra bhaya maitun, that's all. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Whereas the Vedic communism, as Prabhupada said, is broader. Even the ant, Prabhupada often used to say, all living beings are considered. So, there's a higher goal that work is there. Everyone is given some work to do, but not excessive work. Work for our material needs, and the focus of society should be spiritual advancement. Okay, I'll take a little break. See you all in a few minutes. If you want, you can. Anyway, you can do whatever you like as long as it's not against the tenets of Krishna consciousness. And see you in a few minutes. You have anyone there? Vrindavan Chandra?
Yeah.
Anyone there?
Right.
Yeah, to understand all these points, we should make a deep study of Gita and Bhagavata. We're all busy, 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 running here and there, but at least some devotees should be busy studying Shastra. But actually, we can't understand it just by studying. It's not an academic feat. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, we can understand these points and practically apply them also. So, we'll go on to question 4. I doubt if we're going to finish all these questions today. If not, we can go to the and take them up at the philosophical camp next month. But many of these questions, it seems that if you have the basic understanding, then the apparent contradictions, they're automatically understood. It's understanding that how the terminology is used in different places, that not everything refers to everyone. What is stated in one part of Shastra is for certain people on a certain level, on a certain path, and what is stated somewhere else is for other people. And that's what I was saying, like Shankara will say one way, Ramanuja will say another way, according to their understanding. They say, this means this. Because they see the whole picture is like this, and therefore this fits in like this. Yavanartha udapane sarvata samtutodake
tavan sarveshu
vedeshu
vijanata,
one understands properly. One who understands the purpose of the Vedas, then he can understand all the details. Just like if you have a large body of water, then all the purposes of a small body are served. So in the same way, if we understand the big picture, if we have the understanding of the principles, then all the details they fit into, we can understand them also. So it may not be necessary to go through so many questions. So we just understand this basic point of how the Shastra is spoken, for who, for which purpose, and then everything is understood. Where's that Bhagavad Gita? We should. I always wanted to have someone with me who knew all the verses, and then because I always start, not always, but I often start quoting, and then I don't remember it. So it's good to have someone who can just be there. Of course, you can look them up. Nowadays we have the folio. All these modern devices make people less intelligent. Yeah. Nowadays people, they can't. You ask someone to multiply 283 by 5,412 to actually do it, with not do it with a machine, they'll have a problem. I couldn't do it in my head, but by writing it down I can do it more easily. But I think most people can't do it. If you ask them to divide one by the other, they'll be really stuck. I might be stuck too. So like that, people used to know Shastra. Nowadays, you just look it up. Look up a verse. Look in the folio. Makes people less intelligent. Nowadays, anyone can be a pundit. Just type something, you've got all the quotes. Previously, you had to know them. So what was that verse? Sarvata Samplitotiki?
Brahmanasya
Vijanata. Oh, that's the important word. Knowing about the Brahman. Yeah, that's the point. The big body of water is compared to Brahman. So all the purposes of the Vedas. Of course, Brahman here means the Vedas, actually. Actually, it's the Vedas. So one who knows the purpose of the Vedas, he can understand all the details. Just like if you have a big body of water, then all the, just like in the village, you'll have one well for Brahmins, one well for some paddle for the Harijans, so-called Harijans, and different, and then one is for cooking, one is for washing. If you have a large body, a large river or a lake, then you do everything there. So, question for reference. We're on the right page, actually. Sri Chaitanya Shikamata, I really got that. As long as material desires... Where is that? As long as material desires... Desire is present in the heart. A person performing sadhana bhakti should follow the injunctions of Varnashram. That's directly from Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna says that. In Uddhava Gita. But a person is free from material desires and practices sadhana bhakti according to the junction of scriptures, free from the three debts. But still he may follow the injunctions of Krishna. Krishna himself largely follows. The Mahabharata is, and Ramayana also, but especially Mahabharata, it's a history of what makes the story interesting and instructive are the repeated dharma sankat, the where one principle of dharma clashes with another. You have to make a decision. There's no win-win. This Stephen Covey had this idea of making a win-win situation. But just like Arjuna, he was in a lose-lose situation. If I fight, I won't like the result. If I don't fight, the result is also not good. There's no win-win for Arjuna. The win-win is surrender to Krishna. In the material world, there's always, should I fight? If I fight, okay, I'm doing my duty as a kshatriya, I'll do what everyone expects of me. Yudhishthira wants me to fight, but then I have to fight my guru. I have to fight with Brahmins, I have to fight with friends. But Krishna, he didn't accept that. He said, well, you're killing someone, you're not going to kill them because you're a friend, but you've been killing people all your life. There's always someone's friend. There's always someone's father, brother, husband. Just because your father or your grandfather, why should you be so attached? So, as long as material desires are there, one should follow Varnashram. Is it the devotees on the Raga platform being completely detached from the bodily platform due to having awakened their natural desire to serve the Lord are no more dependent on performing either the primary rules, Navavidha Bhakti, or the secondary rules, Varnashram of the scriptures? Well, Navavidha Bhakti, that's in a different category to Varnashram. Varnashram is social rules, which one may be an atheist and perform Varnashram. and follow that. Naravidya bhakti, that's not only meant for awakening one's sense of bhakti, but it is constitutionally bhakti. When one becomes perfect in bhakti, he may not chant a fixed number of rounds, but he goes on, definitely he'll go on chanting the names of Krishna. He may not follow the rules and regulations of deity worship, but it, like this rascal, demon, what's his name, Asharam, he, on one of his pravachans on, that came on television, so I was told. I never watched any of his kathas, and Krishna blessed me that I never will. But he was, he told a story of this Tukaram. He went for, that Tukaram went for darshan in the temple, Vittal. And Vittal said to him, you don't have to come here anymore. He said, what? Tukaram asked, he said, now you're perfect, so you and me are the same, so no need to come anymore. This is the Mayavadi's idea. You do bhakti, then you realize you are God, and then no need to do bhakti anymore. But that's not at all the case. Bhakti is the means, and the means and the end are the same. Bhaktya samjataya bhaktya. By performing sadhana bhakti, one comes to the spontaneous level. But it doesn't mean that we give up the activities. We may not do it in a strict and regulated way, but it's, kirtan is not just a means to merge into oneness, or even a means to, it's not only meant for awakening a feeling for Krishna. Jai Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Etosha Bhav, Jai Jape Ta Krishna Upajai Bhav. It's the nature of the Hare Krishna mantra. Anyone who chants it, their feeling for Krishna will be awakened. But then what do they do? It's not they stop chanting, they chant more. As Prabhupada was asked once, what is the result of this chanting? Prabhupada said, more chanting. So, yeah, Navavidha Bhakti, it's part of Bhakti. There's 64 angas, principle. In bhakti there can be so many, unlimited, but 64 active. These all constitute bhakti. They constitute sadhana, but one may do so also in the perfect stage. He may or may not. He may or may not perform, for instance, parikrama of the Lord. He may not. So definitely he's going to chant to Sankirtan. He's not going to blaspheme devotees. All this. So, yeah, the devotees in who are in the perfect stage, they don't have to perform regulated devotional service. It's not necessary for them. They don't fall down by not doing so. And they also don't fall down by not following Varnashram duties. But for a neophyte devotee, actually if he doesn't follow Varnashram duties, which are conducive to Krishna consciousness, that may affect his development in Krishna consciousness also, because if he becomes disturbed in mind, just like Krishna said, do your shrayan svadhama vigona haradhama svanushtita, that svanare svadhame nidhanam shraya paradhama bhayava. One should perform one's duties and not another's duties. To perform another's duties is dangerous. Because there are various reasons for that. One reason is that you're not trained for it, you don't have the proper mentality to do it, or just like women, they want to do the same duties as men. But then the duties of women don't get done. Which is having babies and looking after babies. I mean, that's the body that they were given for that. And even if they have babies, they don't look after them. So, they might be able to be do the job of a man well. They may be able to, but it causes disturbance why they're doing so. There's an example. And one may perform offenses also by trying to do someone else's duty, even if you do it very well. You perform an offense to your children. By not discharging your duty properly, then if you don't look after the children, then you're not following you're going against the natural order. The child that was sent by Krishna, you don't look after them because you're busy working, making a career, maybe very good in your career. But then what happens to the child? You don't have children. Because you're cultivating some other desires. So, and another point is that Varnashram rules and the rules of bhakti, they coincide in many places. Just like everyone within Vedic culture has to rise early. Whether you're Karmaya, Gyani, Yogi, Bhakta, everyone has to rise up. Everyone has to bathe in the morning after passing stool. One has to bathe. Everyone has to perform some kind of religious duty. Even in Varnashram, even Shudras, they should listen to the Puranas when they recite it, that they can do. So everyone should offer respect to elders. Everyone should respect the cow. So these are there for everyone in Vedic culture, including devotees. So they coincide. Varnashram duties and Varnashram duties. So a Karmi rises early because he thinks it's pious, and I should do that, I'll get a pious result. So I go to heaven. And the devotee does it because he thinks, well, I have to get up and serve Krishna. But actually in Karma Kanda we find it's not just such a gross thing that I'll get a pious result. As we saw, the older generation of people in India, the many pious people, the whole atmosphere of Vedic culture is that, alright, they're doing it, they want to get a pious result, but they have the idea of dharma. Dharma rakshati rakshataha. That we should perform dharma. That it is goodness itself, it is a duty. It's intrinsic for every good human being that they should perform dharmic activities. And not necessarily even think that I'm going to get this place. Not that they're calculating all the time, I'll get a pious result. But they naturally think, yes, we should have goshalas to protect cows. We should feed brahmanas. We should respect the Ganga. We should respect sadhus. So it's not that they're all... I mean, you've seen... I don't know if you have, but they're practically a dead breed, it seems. But the old pious people... How they're not necessarily calculating at every moment, okay, I'll do this and I'll get a pious result, but the whole ethos of piety, yes, dharma, we should follow, this should be done. They don't even serving the elders, it's not that they're thinking, yes, I'll do this and then I'll get this, but just from childhood, you see your parents serving their elders, and it's just something that should be done. There's no question of not doing it. You know that we have to, this is the proper thing to do. And therefore they do it. But then now the modern culture has come. So no one cares for anyone else. But that's specifically done for the sake of dharma. In other cultures, it was there also, serving the elders. That's still there in Russia today, using that example, that the elders, they should be looked after. But then, for the sake of dharma, there's no understanding of doing it for the sake of dharma. So traditional societies the world over, they do things like that. They look after elders. But exactly why they're doing it, they don't have much idea. Hare Krishna. So, does freedom from all debts and from dependence on all rules of Varnashram happen simultaneously? Yeah. Yeah, it's the same stage when one is beyond the rules of, and regulations. When one is beyond the rules and regulations and is free from debts, he's free from varnashram duties. But one may or may not perform. And generally, people do perform, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, at least to instruct others. If in the name of bhakti you stop doing all these things, then people will take it as an excuse not to do it. So one should perform one's duties, as Krishna says, even I do, just to instruct others. But one may be completely detached, but then one has to be completely detached. The Babaji life is in Gaurya Vaishnavism is supposed to be completely detached. Then one should be like Gaurakishore Das Babaji. And he didn't accept anyone unless they're on the same level as him. That's Babaji life. If you want to be a Babaji, be like Gaurakishore. Now we see the Babajis, they have all feasts cooked for them. That's not Babaji life. Someone comes and offers a feast and they're always eating feasts. That's not Babaji. Babaji life should be extremely renounced. Otherwise, one should act within Varnashram. That's why people criticize Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati for accepting sannyas. He said that by taking sannyas, we are admitting our lower level and serving the Paramahamsas. He himself was acting on the Paramahamsa platform. He chanted his billion realms. Didn't he had a hat, kuti, he would sit under an umbrella. He wouldn't repair the roof. And it rained, he just put an umbrella. Nowadays we think umbrellas, it goes up. Well, those days, umbrella means this made from cane, like you see in the pictures of Vamanadeva. For sheltering from the sun and the rain. So he was leading an extremely renounced life. Then he took sannyas and apparently he became more worldly. But he said that we were taking a position lower than the Paramahamsa level to actually took that for instructing others. Because Gaurakishore Das Babaji, people came to him, but he wouldn't instruct them. Unless they were on his level, he wouldn't have anything to do with them. That's why he had one disciple. He didn't offer a process to come up step by step. Bhaktisiddhanta offered that. Alright, sannyas means in Varnashram. You come up step by, he offered a process by which you can gradually, you have to start to live in the mud or to be initiated, you have to come to a certain level of commitment. And then you can go on further gradually. But we don't see people coming immediately to this spontaneous level. Therefore, regulated. Regulated life in Krishna consciousness is required to come to that platform. What is the relationship of a sadhak on the platform of Vaidhi Bhakti? And that on the platform of Raga Bhakti with regard to freedom from debts and freedom from dependence on the rules of Varnashram. How much in sadhana bhakti, the sadhak, how much he should follow that, he will have to be told by his guru. You do this, you do that. It's an individual thing. According to their level of according to their level of attachment and according to the role that the guru wants them to play in society. Someone may be very advanced and not needing to follow, but he may be told that anyway you follow all these things to show others how to do it. That's what Srila Prabhupada said when he was talking about Varnashram. The devotees kept on asking, well, what about this Brahman Kshatriya? He said, no, we're all Vaishnavas, but we'll take different roles to show others. Otherwise, all devotees, they're all Vaishnavas. We don't consider Brahmana Vaishnava, Shudra Vaishnava, PhD Vaishnava, illiterate Vaishnava. Everyone's a Vaishnava. But that's the new caste system in India. This is an educated Vaishnava. This is an uneducated. Krishna doesn't ask, first you get a PhD, then you serve me. Or one who has a PhD is better. So why do you agree? Yeah.
So if a person in the early stages is indebted to demigods and...
The person is indebted to demigods. He might be indebted to the bank. That's more... That's more likely. I mean, the more likely, more pressing, you could say, in his consciousness. So if you have a loan to the bank and you say, now I'll become a sadhu, that may be one reason to become a sadhu. Can't pay off your debt. So we don't recommend become a sadhu just because you can't pay off your debt to the bank. So what's that about that?
So then how does he liquidate his debt? Is it by, because he's serving Krishna, therefore that debt is...
If you're fully dedicated to serving Krishna, then yatataro mulashechena tripyanti tatskanda bhuja prasad prano paharach cha yatendrayanam tathaiva sarahana matyutaja. Two examples given. Watering the root of a tree. The twigs, leaves, branches, flowers, fruits, they're all nourished. Providing food to the stomach, all the rest of the body is nourished. So if one is fully dedicated to Krishna, then everything else is taken care of. If not, then one has some obligations. But that's the point. One should fully surrender to Krishna. That's what we're preaching. Come and fully surrender to Krishna. And don't think, I have to satisfy my parents, I have to satisfy the demigods, but there's no end. They'll never be satisfied. That's why people think, first of all satisfy, then satisfy Krishna. One will go on for many lifetimes and come until he comes to the point of understanding that I have to satisfy Krishna. Not that I have to satisfy everyone else first, because they'll never be satisfied. At some point, if you think, well, I have this material desire, let me fulfill it, and then after I'll surrender to Krishna. But then the material desires are endless. At some point, one has to say, okay, now, kamadiyam katida, what is that? Katina Durnidesha. Yeah, that verse is there. That I've been trying to fulfill material desire. I've been trying to serve these material desires, but they just go on and on. They're never satisfied. So at some point one has to come to the point of saying, okay, now I'm going to stop this idea of trying to satisfy my material desires, stop this idea of trying to satisfy other people's material desires. People see us as a vehicle to satisfy their material desires. The parents see us as a vehicle for satisfying their material desires. Okay, now I'm going to surrender to Krishna. And then other people may yell at me, scream at me, and tell me it's no good, and Krishna won't satisfy you, the devotees are all no good, and they're all bad, and we love you more, and it goes on and on. You go on millions of lifetimes like that. First of all, it's the parents, and then it's the wife, and then it's the children. No, you can't. They'll let you, once they see you're completely useless, and you can't provide them anything, then they'll say, okay, now you take sannyas. Now we don't want to look after you. Now you should take sannyas. As long as they calculate, they can get more out of you than they have to put into you. They'll want you. Yes, you be with us. You have to. Krishna will be pleased if you supply our sense gratification. There's no end to this. So at some point you have to cut and say, no, I'm no more longer trying to, now I'm surrendering to Krishna fully. And then you become free from death. But if you want to take that as an excuse, just like that, you become a sadhu because you have a bank loan. So you change your name, change your cloth, change your face and go to Haridwar and join an ashram. And there you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and then they have a little service and then drink some tea, read them. You've seen so many ashrams. It's like that. They'll have some half hour aarti in the morning and then they'll be, in the winter, they'll be sitting in the morning sun drinking tea, reading the newspaper. And what do they do? What are they doing? It's just like a pious retirement home. Most of the ashrams, as it's said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Kali Yuga, the ashrams will resemble grihastas' homes, except there's no responsibilities. So that kind of sannyas is useless. There should be a very strong desire to serve Krishna. Then one is free from all that. When one is completely dedicated to serving Krishna, when one has no goal in life other than to serve Krishna, then you're free from other debts. Why do we have to put this fellow Shrub? Yeah, good question. Why do they? No need actually. The Karmi Shrub, you shouldn't do that. You can do, but according to Gopal Bhakta's instructions, do it like that.
But that's also not mandatory.
Especially if the parents are devotees, then what are you going to do? You're going to say, I don't go back to Godhead, come and you have to stay here so we can offer you some pinda, you know, the pitri loka. No, you don't do that. This karmi shrad, they're offering them some pinda so they can go to pitri loka. We don't have anything to do with that. Is it simply to pacify the non-devotees? You might do, someone might do. But then why pacify the non-devotees? Devotees and non-devotees are always, they're never going to agree. So sooner or later you have to come out. Right, Chitta Hari? So you were at home and, or not exactly, you joined the temple and then your family said, no, you have to come back. We just want to see you, that's all. I mean, we can't live without seeing you. So you went back and then you got a job in Bangalore and your family didn't see you. But they were quite happy that you weren't in the temple. They weren't seeing you. Somehow or other, they were able to live without seeing you, which had been impossible as long as you were in the temple. But somehow they got enough courage to live without seeing you as long as you were doing a job in Bangalore. And they never agreed to you joining the temple, but eventually you came and joined. Actually, you could have joined years ago, but you're just waiting for them to become satisfied. But they'll never become satisfied. So, there's no end to it. They satisfy the non-devotees, there's no... As long as they're in the consciousness that this son of mine, this brother of mine, this whatever it may be, his duty is to act for my sense gratification. They won't say that, but that's what it comes down to. So you can't satisfy them because we act, devotional service means to act for the satisfaction of Krishna. And they can never, as long as they don't understand that, they may even be initiated devotees. We see in many cases, initiated devotees, they still have the same mentality. that my life is meant for my sense gratification. If the devotees don't act in a way that's pleasing to me, they are wrong. There's something intrinsically wrong with them. Karmis are better, they said, because they act better. Maybe they're more polite in their acts of sense gratification than certain devotees, but it's this idea that I come to Krishna, I'm doing bhakti and we're serving Krishna, and Krishna's job is to make everything nice for me. That's what Arjuna thought. That's why Krishna called him a fool. Govinda, nayotsa iti govindam. He spoke to Govinda. I'm not going to fight. You're Govinda, you're supposed to satisfy my senses. So do it. Well, it's all your fault you made this war in the first place. What are you doing? What kind of god are you? Arjuna wasn't satisfied with Krishna. So Krishna told Arjuna, you're just a fool. You think you know, and you'll find that the karmis, there's so many reasons. You see, you have to do this and you have to do that, and this is the way you can really satisfy Krishna. And all nonsense. Because they have not accepted the principle that we are meant to satisfy Krishna. We're not meant for anything else. We're not meant to satisfy parents, uncles, in-laws, dogs, cats. We're supposed to satisfy Krishna. As long as you don't get that, then you didn't get anything. What happens to relationships if the devotee is sakam? If a devotee is sakam, he's not really a devotee. When we say sakam bhakta, what it means is someone who's performing bhakti specifically with the idea of fulfilling material desires. It's not really bhakti at all. Someone who comes to bhakti with the aim of surrendering to Krishna, but who has material desires, that's not sakam bhakti. One who has the intention to surrender to Krishna, that he's called a pure devotee. If the intention is definitely to surrender to Krishna, that is the beginning of pure devotional service. But if one has another intention, that is not pure devotional service. So he's called a Vaishnava Prai or a Kanishta Adhikari. He can perform bhakti, but it's at a lower level. Again, it's the understanding with which we come to it. A pure devotee and a neophyte devotee, they may perform the same activities, kirtan, but the mentality is different. Just like some years ago I heard that some devotees came together, they weren't practicing, but they had a reunion. They all came together, and it was in the West, and some of them were drinking, some were smoking, and not following the principles, not chanting 16 rounds. So, but our kirtan, it was so blissful, more blissful than the one in the temple. As if to say that, well, we're on a better level than all these people are following all the rules. We're really spontaneous. So, you know, when last night I was drinking some beer, but then we came to the temple and we had a great kirtan. As in the West now, it's become popular, kirtan, all for sense gratification. So, but and sometimes our devotees, they're bewildered, that they think, oh, there's this book, Kirtan Yoga, and the first person interviewed in it says, well, he's famous for chanting Hare Krishna in America, among a certain people, yoga groups. He said, well, I don't think of some young boy, I don't believe any such person as Krishna. Well, so what's the use of their kirtan? Oh, great kirtan. He's such a great person. He's got so many people to chant Hare Krishna, but that's all poison. Avaishnava mokod girna putam harikatam utam shravana naivakata sapochishtam yatapa. Getting so many people to chant, it's all poison. Like milk touched by the lips of a snake. So even a neophyte devotee who's following and seriously trying to give up material desires and surrender to Krishna, even if he's not very advanced in the process, is in a better position than someone who gets many to chant Hare Krishna, but with the wrong concept. It's going to be more difficult to get those people to come to devotional service than people who have no idea of it, because they started off with the wrong idea. They're unfortunate enough to come in contact with the chanting of Hare Krishna via a person who's a demon. He's chanting Hare Krishna, but he's a demon. He's against the whole idea of, or the understanding that Krishna is a person who we have to surrender with, which means that then there's no surrender to Krishna. There's no seva, there's no what they call bhakti. It's just a complete mess from the very beginning. Therefore, how important is proper understanding? And even people, they, you know, like I say, they may. I'm not against Bhakti Shastra, I'm for it, I'm promoting it, but you see people, they get their degree, Bhakti Shastra, they can get, you know, 99%, they don't understand, it's not actually in their heart, the transformation hasn't taken place. Well, I got my Bhakti Shastra degree. It's a question of consciousness. So, I don't know if that exactly answers your question, but many times the answer is not an exact answer. Many times it may not be exact, like we're trying to do some arithmetic. The commentaries of the acharyas on Shastra, they're often that's called bhavanuvad. Anuvad is usually translated as translation, but it literally means to speak again. So the commentary, bhavanuvad, it means it gives, bhava means meaning, or feeling, so it means that we're saying what's said in the verse, now we're going to say it again. Giving the meaning, the feeling, the understanding. So Prabhupada in his translations, it may not be exactly word for word precise, but it gives the meaning. What Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada is expressing that. So, someone may say, well, it's not exactly precisely, but it's not a, when, bhakti is not like studying geometry. Of course, even in geometry, when you get further out, it can get, well, basic geometry, it's pretty straightforward. Geometry, then trigonometry. It's pretty straight. I mean, well, even there, there are just like what is. You can't exactly define pi. You can get. It seems you could. You could try and calculate it to 20 million places, and you'd still. That's interesting. Is that an anomaly in the universe? Anyway, let's not talk about it. I'm just making the point that this modern idea of science that you have to exactly define everything and exactly understand everything, but many times it's bhavanuvad. If one gets the feeling of it, then you get everything. If you don't, then you can write this, that, and explain so many things, but just somehow you missed the point. You didn't really get it. Sri Chaitanya Shikamata concludes that the Varnashram duties gradually get transformed into bhakti activities as one advances, and that those duties that are not favorable are given up. How to step this standards for Vaidhi Bhaktas, who should follow what duties? Again, it will depend on individuals or maybe whole communities. It's not so fixed. Even in the Varnashram culture, as it was practiced in India, well, there are various considerations. One thing is that for hundreds of years, it hasn't been possible to follow the Varnashram duties properly in many places, because there's no king. Without a king, the society can't work properly. I mean, you might have a Muslim king, but that doesn't count. So, the king has an important role of organizing the whole society and being the yajaman in major yajnas. So, without a king, you can't have proper Varnashram. But then even within Varnashram, there are different communities and different areas they'll follow in somewhat different ways. There are different Veda, even among Brahmanas, there are different Veda Shakas who pronounce differently the Vedas. They maybe their understanding is different, the duties they perform may be somewhat different. So there's a lot of, they all have strict rules which they follow, but the rules which they follow in their community may be somewhat different to others. Now how exactly those rules, well, it's just like Ramanuja was traveling around preaching, and then he gave rules for his community. And generally every acharya, whether they're a Vaishnava acharya or whatever school, they'll give rules exactly what should be done by those in our sampradaya or our community. And there may not be made that much difference, but it's the fine tuning. There may not be that much difference between what they were doing previously. It's just like Advaita Acharya was, from the external point of view, considered a smarter Brahman. But he was a practicing Vaishnava, so he didn't follow all the rules, for which he was considered outrageous. And he offered the Shraddha Patra to Haridas Thakur, which is outrageous. Muslim. It's just completely outrageous. He was following other rules, but then this one. And then Madhavendra Puri initiated him. He was already practicing Vaishnavism, but he took initiation from Madhavendra Puri, who was a sannyasi. And generally, sannyasis, they wouldn't initiate householders. They wouldn't initiate. Mostly gurus, in the Vedic system, gurus were mostly householders. Sannyasis wouldn't initiate. They'd only initiate someone into sannyas. So there are so many considerations. But then, lokiki vaidiki vapi ya kriya kriyate mune. You just had that verse? Whatever all the rules, they should all be dovetailed into bhakti. Whatever we find, the same point. Hari sevanukulaiva. That's the point. Ya bhaktim? Sakaya bhaktim itchati. Everything should be dovetailed. Srila Prabhupada used this word, dovetailed into bhakti. Within the Varnashram, it's also allowed to kill animals. We're not going to do that. We're not going to drink wine. We're not going to do that. That's within Varnashram, but we're not going to encourage that. Amongst Vaishnavas, how to identify one with a brahminical nature, considering the verse Bhagavad Gita 18:42, Shamodama Tapashocham Shanti Arjuna Nevacha. jnana vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavajam. Since it appears that even kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras will manifest these qualities. If you're a devotee, you mean? Yeah. In fact, the qualities that we already mentioned in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita cover all the qualities of a brahmana mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 18:42, thus making the distinction difficult. Yeah, a Vaishnava should have all good qualities, but within that they may have different natures also. Someone may be inclined to some people have very strong business propensity, Vaishya-like propensity. As a devotee, they may have that also. So, that may color their, just like this, samaloshtashva kanchana, one sees stone, iron, or gold, all is the same. If one is in trading consciousness, then he's not in that consciousness. He wants gold. He doesn't see them all as the same. So there may be a different mentality. But one who's in that Vaishya consciousness of doing business, then he has to be guided to do that in Krishna's service. And again, in terms of dharma, just like the Marwari community, very successful business community in India. Traditionally in business, they're rapacious, means greedy and exploited. They're known for that. But they're also, in business, it's all's fair in love and war and business. That seems to be their motto. But but traditionally they would live in a very dharmic way, in many ways. Their women, I mean, they would be vegetarian, they wouldn't drink wine, they wouldn't take garlic or onions, they wouldn't eat anything, not even the papa or the achar, everything would be made at home. You have the Marwari's wife, her husband's a multi-crop party, and she'll be at home personally making the papa, yes, and achar. They won't buy anything from outside. And they'll support barbers, dobi, they have their own dobi for their home. And they'll sponsor yagyas. So like they'll give lavish, they'll build temples. So they have a very strong business aptitude. And to try to make someone who has that aptitude into a renowned sannyasi would not be advisable. But at the same time, they would do business, but at the same time they'd give back to society by using their wealth for pious activities. As Prabhupada mentions in Bhagavad Gita, opening dharmashalas, vidyapit, all this. So they would use their wealth for sponsoring dharma. So if someone does, of course nowadays everyone's trained as a shudra from birth, to just the lowest kind of shudra, just to enjoy the, I mean even a shudra in Vainashram society, it's a respectable position if one's following actually. But nowadays it's just enjoy the senses, and no one can be independent. From the beginning you have to think, what kind of job are you going to do? From the beginning. There's no thought of living independently. Still there are some Gujarat Patels. They still, Shahs, Jains, they still like to do their own business, isn't it? They think that's better, to do your own business, or have your own land and farm it. So still, there are some communities in In Bengal, the Shaha business community, Kundu, so they still have some idea that you should have your own business. It might be a small business. They might be selling pakoras from a hot lodge. It's my own business. They feel better than working for someone. So that spirit of being independent, but that's going now. The idea that everyone's trained as a Shudra. So it might be difficult to distinguish who's a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, a Shudra, because everyone's a Shudra. And that's maybe one reason also why it's been difficult for us to set up these Varnashram communities, because everyone, it's just like we have run, everyone, our devotees also, they're so concerned about security. They think security means to have money in a bank. But the whole idea that security is not a consideration in Varnashram society. No one thinks about security. No one thinks about health care. It's just all automatically taken care of within the culture. But nowadays, security, health care, everything all depends upon money. And everyone's just saying, how to get money, how to get money, how to get money. You have to get a job. You have to get a good job. A good job means one that gives more money. And everyone's in anxiety. So it's a whole different consciousness, really. We have to instill a whole different consciousness. At a young age, boys should be separated. Those who are going to go on for deep study, those who are going to be working, they can be separated. Previously there wasn't that much problem. The potter's son becomes a potter, the carpenter's son becomes a carpenter, the priest's son becomes a priest. It's just a very natural thing. Modern society has messed everything up. Right. Opportunity. You have an opportunity to be more, do more. And then everyone's frustrated because only very few people do more. And most people that just have some lousy, and actually all the jobs, no one's happy in their job. Most people spend their whole life spending most of their time doing something they don't want to do. They're working in an office in a job they don't want to do, with people they don't like, under conditions they don't like. They're not inspired by it. They're punching data in a computer. There's no sense of. I mean, there's another thing you'll hear about people talking about, self-esteem. What self-esteem? There's no self-esteem because you're not, it's just everyone, the carpenter has self-esteem. He makes something useful that he can see. He makes a chair and he sees someone using it. And no one asks him to, but he'll make it very nicely. And maybe put some design on it, and he feels very good about offering that to someone. Now, and he'll see, he'll be in the same village that they're using. Nowadays you're working in a factory making plastic chairs. You don't know who you're working for, it's some multinational, you never see the boss, and you don't know who it goes to, and they don't care, whoever buys it, they don't care who made it. And you can change your job from making plastic chairs to punching data in a computer. It's just, you become like part of a machine. So whatever it is, it's very unsatisfying. So the barber, you may think, well, what self-satisfaction? Yeah, well, he feels a sense that, yeah, I'm serving people. He's directly serving people. And so, and he, by doing so, he performs his duty and he supports his family. Whereas in the modern society, the people, they don't have a sense of family. One reason for that is the welfare state. The government, if women have children without a husband, they get paid by the government. So what do you need a husband for? Even if he has if you have a husband, what do you need him for? You divorce him, and then by law he still has to give you money. So what? Right? What do you need a husband for? So their idea of helping people, it actually causes problems. Anyway, I'm going a little bit off the point here. Who should follow what duties? How to set the standards? Well, we'll have to be guided by Shastra and by touch and go. We just have to see how it works out. Re-establishing Varnashram is it's a big challenge, there's no doubt about it. It's just like Prabhupada in the West. He said, Brahmananda told us that. Prabhupada said, I was experimenting. He gave people the basic process of Krishna consciousness, but at some point he changed his whole attitude. In the beginning it was like he'd initiate people very quickly. One day he told Vaikunthanath, okay, you marry Sharadiya and this and that, and he married them all the next day. And then within a few years he was very enthusiastic, okay, they'll get married and they'll serve in Krishna consciousness. But after just a short time he stopped having anything to do with marriage whatsoever. He was confident that the devotees, there is no astrological matching, they think they're devotees, they live as devotees, and everything will be alright. But then he saw that people were not as committed as he, or strong as he'd hoped they would be. And he changed his attitude. So in establishing Varnashram also, maybe somewhat experimental, we have to see. And people say, well, they may suffer. You may make some wrong decisions. That's also there. That's inevitable. You learn by your mistakes. We have to be very careful. But unless we do this, then people are just left in the modern society, which is horrible. They're never going to make any advancements. So those who are coming newly, they should be a little patient also. People see security in the modern life, but it's not secure actually. You can lose your job. You can lose your home. The government may just say, well, we're taking over this land, and that's it, get out. There's no security. Even from the material point of view, modern society is, what they're doing to people is horrible. Here in India, what they're doing is horrible. Now they're going to forcibly make all the farmers give up their land, corporate farming. They're already physically moving people off the land to make huge industrial projects. The whole society is set up for a few people. The politicians, police, judges, totally corrupt. And they wonder why these Maoists are blowing people up, just out of frustration. The society is extremely imbalanced and exploited. So we're trying to give something better. We can say to the Maoists, if we can establish this, we can say to the Maoists, here, this is the solution, not blowing people up. And we can say to we can say to the common people, this is the solution. Why work for some exploitive company. You can, and we can say to the, we can tell the big demons, you are big demons. Why are you exploiting people? Now we can't say that. In ISKCON we used to say, oh, the demons, they're all big demons. We can't say anymore because we joined them. We didn't make any alternative. We have to do it. It's our duty to Prabhupada. To try to help this society. It may not be easy, but we may make mistakes, but as long as there's plenty of kirtan and prasadam, the basic principles are there, then everything will be alright. And we should see, of course, some of the terrible mistakes of the past of putting wrong people in position, like in the Gurukul. There's a terrible exploitation of children. It may not be that the people put in that position themselves in each case were so very bad. Some of them, they beat the children, and they had no training, they didn't know what to do, and they got in some kind of syndrome. And even in the case of sexual abuse, it's not necessary that everyone who did that went into the school with the deliberate idea to do that. But they may have come as devotees and they found themselves in a very difficult situation. The movement was very difficult in many ways in the early days. So we'll have to be very careful, but we should take it up. We shouldn't not take it up because it's difficult and it's a challenge. Even now, children who are in this, ex-children, they're all ex-children, who are in the schools and they're complaining, we're mistreated in this and that. Well, that's true, but you would have been mistreated in the broader society. I mean, you go to school now, you're in danger of getting shot dead, right? At least we didn't shoot anyone dead in the school. But I mean, they did get chanting of Hare Krishna. They should see that also. They did get the chance to serve Krishna. So they should see that also. Amongst Vaishnavas, how did... Oh yeah, we just did that. Inasmuch as karma and jnana make the body, mind and environment favorable for bhakti, they can be accepted as means, otherwise condemned as materialistic endeavors. But in the indirect process of the yoga ladder, even that part of karma and jnana which is unfavorable for bhakti, but helps one to ascend to the higher level, e.g. demigod worship, is also accepted as the means. So is the above description of the direct process, but contextually it appears that the gradual process is being discussed. I'm not exactly sure what this question is. Also states that those who practice Varnashram without making bhakti their ultimate goal go to hell, even if they follow Varnashram duties. Then how will the gradual process work? A progressive yogi on the gradual path does not know that the ultimate goal is devotional service. Yeah, this jnana process generally leads to an impersonal goal. But it's considered more advanced than the karma process because the atato brahma jignasa. When you're finished with gross sense enjoyment, then come to spiritual understanding. So at least there's some understanding. This material world is miserable, we're spiritual beings, we don't belong here. So in that sense, it's a gradual improvement. On the other hand, it's seen from different perspectives. On one hand, if we don't worship Krishna, everything is useless. We just go back to birth and death. Ashada dhana purusha dharma stasya paranta aprapyamang nevartante mrityu samsara. We just remain in birth and death. On the other hand, it is better to be a Hindu, pious Hindu, than an impious Hindu, or a Christian or a Muslim. In one sense, it's better. because one is more likely to, in that situation, to take to Krishna consciousness, and one is less likely to perform grossly sinful activities, which they pollute the consciousness, and they cause suffering to others, and they cause one to go to a situation, hellish situation, where one is unlikely to have any possibility of contact with Krishna consciousness. So from one perspective, yes, the Varnashram system, gradual advancement, that is a gradual advancement, but it all comes to zero unless you come to Krishna consciousness. But then if you have a whole bunch of zeros and you put a one before it, it becomes something valuable. Just like if someone comes from a very sinful, disturbed background, we see even after taking to Krishna consciousness that because of their disturbed mind, it's very difficult for them to actually focus in Krishna consciousness. Whereas if one comes from a, if someone is already trained, for instance, in Vedas and takes to Krishna consciousness, well, then he can do service in preaching and by the Vedic processes of being pious, controlling the mind, that can be very useful. I mean, that can be helpful for him in Krishna consciousness. So it's a matter of perspective. Many of these questions, it's just a matter of seeing everything in proper perspective, and there are many more questions, and I think they're all more or less along similar lines. Yeah.
So do not go to hell, it is figurative. Like, in a gradual process, he may not be...
If you don't become Krishna conscious, you go to hell. Well, you may go to heaven, but then eventually you're going to go to hell, because if you're not Krishna conscious, then it's, you go up, you come down, and like King Riga, at some point, you may make some mistake, and just, it seems almost by chance, you're going to go to hell. Again, the material world is hell, from another perspective. Daiva Varnashram should be the only principle by which to recognize individuals and decide which caste, that should have an E at the end, they belong to. Caste, C-A-S-T-E. Should then to find a proper match for aspiring grihastha devotees, we ascertain the caste by their qualities. Traditionally, there is a consideration of anuloma and pratiloma match. How do we ascertain women's qualities to match men of different varnas? Tough question. Probably just follow the caste as far as possible. Do you know what I mean? It's a different culture in different families, at least in India. Like I say, nowadays it's more like old Shudra, but until recently, I mean, there were Vaishya family down here, there are Chetiyas and Patels. Actually, Patels are farmers, originally, mostly. I mean, their culture is, their whole way of thinking is very much like that, isn't it? That's why we find the, just like when Drupad Maharaj, he sent Drishta after Arjuna, one Draupadi, then Drupad Maharaj, he sent Drishta Dyumna to spy and see what kind of Brahmin, what kind of people are there. So they went back to their Brahmin cottage, but they were talking, and he was listening from outside, and they're talking about weapons and fighting. So he said they must be, he came back and said they must be Kshatriyas. So then they came, they were to come to the palace the next day, the five brothers, and Drupad Maharaj arranged on one table some yajna utensils, and another table he arranged some weapons. When the Pandavas came in, they immediately went and looked at the weapons. They said they're Kshatriyas. The Brahmanas would have gone and looked at the spoons and all the different items. But that would have been their interest. But so, How do we ascertain women's qualities? Well, generally it went by the family line. There could be exceptions, but generally it would go by the family line. Nowadays, you'll have to see. But at least in India, there's still caste, which to some extent works. To some extent. Maybe after one or two generations, then it won't make any difference. In Daivavan Ashram, various samskars are performed by worshipping Krishna and his devotees. Should Upanayanam samskar also be performed at the prescribed age? Well, first of all, I have to think if the child is fit for that. Right? It used to be a family ritual, right?
Family?
Ritual. And there was a different ages for Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. What we call the Brahmin thread, actually that was traditionally given in all the castes. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they'd also have threads. In Bengal there were only Brahmanas and Shudras. Because one of the kings at one point, he just said all the, everyone else, no, the Brahmanas, out of anger against one of the kings, they just declared that, okay, everyone's a Shudra. It's quite complex, all this stuff. If so, then at the time of Pancharatri Diksha of such devotees, what happens to the thread, to their thread-giving ceremony? Actually, Upanayanam Samskara is for studying the Vedas. We don't study the Vedas per se. For studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Upanayanam Samskara, which is the better than the Vedas for Kali Yuga, or Mahabharata. For that, the Upanayanam Samskara is not required. So it may not be necessary at all to have Upanayanam Samskara. Because we put more emphasis on Bhagavatam than the Vedas anyway. We do consider Bhagavatam Shruti, according to Jiva Goswami. But then at the same time, that we don't... Well, let's see. Now, in traditional society, yeah, actually the Brahmanas would recite Puranas, but everyone can listen to it. Stri Shudra Dvija Bandhunam Traina Veda Gocha. Here, Veda means Shruti. And therefore, the Mahabharata was compiled, and everyone can listen to it. So, Shruti can only be heard by the upper castes, or the upper Varnas, to be more precise. So, Bhagavatam, it's accepted as Shruti by Jiva Goswami, that means by us. But at the same time, the rules for hearing Shruti do not apply. And actually the speaker of the Bhagavatam, Sutta means he's not a Brahmana by caste. But when Roma Harshan was killed, Roma Harshan was Sutta, but then the rishis who were present said to Balaram that you've committed the sin of Brahmahatya. Not exactly the sin, but they considered him a Brahman. He was speaking, he took the role of a Brahman. Anyway, these are often very complex questions. Basically, we should just understand that the status of a Brahmana is included in that of a Vaishnava. So if one is chanting Hare Krishna, with a motive to surrender to Krishna. He's above Varnashram in one sense. But as much as we have material desires, then we need to follow Varnashram. But the devotees may also be take roles, but it's not their real identity. It's not even their prime identity. Neither as he identifies himself, nor as others should identify him. As long as one is not a Vaishnava, one's primary identity, as it is conceived of by himself and by others in society, as a Brahmana, Vaishya, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or Antyaja. But if one is a Vaishnava, then he may play a role as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, not a Chandan. He may play that role, but he understands himself as Gopi Bhata, Pada Kamala, Dasa, Nidasa, Dasa. And others should also consider him like that. And to consider him otherwise is an offense. Here the refutation, Brahma Gyan is a distorted form of knowledge of God. What's the whole quote? SCS, Sri Chaitanya Shikamrita, page 161. Anyway, the question is, what are the differences between Advaitavadis and true followers of Jnana Khanda in terms of their understanding, practices and destination? It's an often asked question. The Mayavadis, followers of Shankaracharya, and Brahmavadis, like the four Kumaras. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Mayavadi Krishna Aparadhi. The Mayavadis are offenders to Krishna because they deny that he has any form, qualities, personality, name. Whereas the Advaitavadis or the Brahmavadis, it appears that they just don't have much information about Krishna. And thus they don't deny him. Of course the four Kumaras, they went to Vaikuntha for darshan of Vishnu. What was their philosophical conception of him? Maybe it needs some more research. Maybe they accepted him as the supreme, but they were personally attached to the impersonal process. They weren't deliberately or directly formulating and propagating a philosophy denying the supremacy of Krishna. But they felt that, again, they didn't have association with, unless and until you have association with pure devotees, you can be as advanced as the four Kumaras and still not get the point. One has to have association with devotees. Or with, in their case, with Vishnu himself. But they didn't have contact with Vishnu or Vaishnavism. Because when they did, then they immediately felt a change. Again, which wouldn't happen to everyone, because they were in many ways in very pure consciousness. Then just by smelling the aroma of the tulasi leaves from Vishnu's feet, then they became overwhelmed with the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. It doesn't happen to everyone. They were very pure. So they may not have had so much information about Krishna. We say Brahmara Durlabha Prem, or that even to get Krishna Prasad is very rare. We hear, why is it rare? We're getting it all the time, but it may not be generally available, or even knowledge of Krishna consciousness may not always be available. And I was raised in a culture where there was no knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Within Vedic culture, it may be like that also. If you're raised in the Mimamsaka school, we have no idea. You may be following all the Vedic rituals, we have no idea that Krishna consciousness is the goal of life. But if you're raised in a culture which has knowledge of Krishna but directly denies him, well, that's very unfortunate. Shankaracharya himself, of course, he left clues. I mean, right in his very first verse of his Gita commentary, he says, Narayana Parovyata. But his followers, they don't take the... I mean, that's more than a clue, isn't it? He says everything comes from avyakta. But then right at the very beginning, he says Narayana is beyond that. But people are attached to the wrong understanding. We need to do research and make a book called The Real Shankaracharya. It's one of the many thousands of books that need to be written.
Krishna says in to Uddhava that there are three things which are prescribed shastras: karma, jnana and bhakti. So the genuine jnanis, according to the Vedic process, who are going for the gradual process, and the mayavadis, who say that they are jnanis,
yeah,
but they are vivartavadis and they are... So what will be the difference in these two?
What is the difference between the jnani mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava Gita, and the followers of Shankaracharya, or even... Well, you have to look into their philosophy more deeply, but I think it's what I just said, right?
They actually become
offensive. Maybe more so after the Vaishnavism was propagated. I mean, you'll find people who, just like years ago, on this BBT library party, we presented Prabhupada's Bhagavatam to one, library curator or something, and he said, "Ah, what is this? These are all just stories, that's all." He was very dismissive of the Bhagavatam. He didn't respect the Bhagavatam. He must have thought the Upanishads were much better. And generally the Bhagavatam in the modern world as it's presented, it's katha. It's told as some light level stories for people without serious interest in spiritual life, without philosophical interest, as a pious entertainment. So those who think that we are the followers of the Upanishads, we're interested in serious study, then they may be dismissive of the Bhagavatam. Then they become offensive. One of the reasons that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so strong against the upper sampradayas who claimed to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was that they caused other people to be, not only were they offensive themselves, but they caused other people to be also. They gave a wrong impression of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teaching, so that people think that Vaishnavism is just some low class excuse for gross sinful sense indulgence. Regarding Nrsimha, Homam for health, etc., it's questioned by some that this may slacken our faith in him. and bring in the karma kanda mentality. Quite possible. For those whose chanting the holy names does not get affected by bad health, need not bother anything about their health. But for others, it is necessary to try to keep good health by medication and prayer to the Lord. Their acts will remain pure in proportion to the purity of their aim to serve Krishna through these acts. On the other hand, even chanting of the holy names will become offensive if done for the goal of enjoying good health. That is why a sadhak on the Vaidhi stage is asked to perform those varnashram duties that create a favorable situation of body, mind and environment. It cannot be said that only chanting the holy names is sufficient for him because he is still attached to the body. Of course, he will not do anything which is detrimental to bhakti. For example, worshipping demigods for good health. Also, in his worshipping the Lord through Nrisimha Yajna or taking medication or otherwise, his internal mood is, as per the verse, Tattenu Kampam. This was depicted by Srila Prabhupada praying personally after he got two heart attacks on the Jaladuta and his asking his disciples to pray through a standard prayer later. Yeah, the standard prayer was Namaste Narasimhaya. That was introduced by Prabhupada in ISKCON to protect his health. Thus, I think all the procedures prescribed for the pure Vaishnavas in Hari Bhakti Vilasa and Shat Kriya Sardipika for the upkeep of the material circumstances should be followed, and the dependence on them will be reduced to the degree our bhajan becomes independent of our material situation. Interesting question. What does it mean to fully depend on Krishna? Madhavendra Puri followed Ayachakavriti. That means he would get whatever came to him without asking. If someone gave him food, he would eat. If they didn't, he would starve. How far do we adopt this? I mean, even after getting the food, he might have thought, someone might think, if someone follows this, they might think, well, Krishna should also cause someone to open my mouth and pour the food in. I mean, even if you get the food, you have to make some effort to eat it. And how far does this go? In the modern world, or even in the ancient world, there are mats, ashrams, in which there is a regular arrangement for prasadam. So should we, whereas in Madhukari, well, there are different systems. In Madhukari, you may go to the same people every day, or you may go to different people. If you go to the same people, they know, okay, here he comes, giving two chapatis, it's the same every day. If you go to different people, you may not get food at all. So in the ashram, they're actually making some arrangement for food, for income. How far do you go with this? Is it wrong to, even having an ashram is an arrangement for shelter. But that's so that people can take to the processes of Krishna consciousness. So how far do you extend this? It appears that the extension is growing greater as time goes on. For instance, sadhus did not, previously they would not wear shoes. They wouldn't sleep on beds. Still today, if you don't sleep on a bed, that's better. You shouldn't go by vehicle. We're buying vehicles, using vehicles. So, as the point again, that Hari Seva Anukulyaiva, if it's favorable for devotion, we should do so. Prabhupada built that, the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he said, I'm making this somewhat comfortable facility so that my Western disciples can come here and take advantage of the Vrindavan atmosphere. So he didn't expect devotees to come from the West, where they're used to a certain standard of comfort, and come to India and live as some of the traditional sadhus do. Actually, the ashram Prabhupada built, it's just a plain, just plain rooms actually. Sometimes I used to stay and you just sleep on the floor in a very small room. Myself, Pundarik and Ruchi used to stay in one room. And that was it, that was the room full. You couldn't sleep more than three in a room. So it was pretty plain, but Prabhupada thought that was some good facility, because in other places, I don't know what they give in other places. So, yeah, how far do you go with this? Should we make if we get sick, should we just chant the holy name? That's stated in Shastra. And some sadhus used to follow that, just like Gaurakisha does Babaji. But generally, Prabhupada would say that, actually I looked this up about insurance, and in one, this comes later, it's a similar question, should we get insurance? Prabhupada, I looked this up in the Vedas, and in one letter Srila Prabhupada said that about insurance, your question, does it, taking insurance for brahmacharis, health insurance, does it go against the principle of ananyas chintayanto mam, we should just depend on Krishna. So Prabhupada in one letter he said, regarding insurance for the devotees, let the GBC decide. So I mean, he didn't say, if he was on a principle against it, I think he would have said so. And then he expect, in another case, Rameshwar was showing the BBT go down and said, we have everything insured. So, Prabhupada wasn't against insurance on principle. I think it'd be pretty stupid to have a huge go down full of books and no insurance. Should be insured. In that same letter, it came up about health. Prabhupada said he'd consult a doctor. Because often Prabhupada in the early days used to give devotees some ideas. Pimples, put Gopi Chandra. That will get rid of. If you have a pimple, put Gopi Chandra. That will. So he offered different cures. And then devotees all the time come to Prabhupada for cures. Prabhupada said, consult a doctor. How far do you go? That will be seen in different cases. Prabhupada was, different doctors would come and he went, but he was not very good in following their advice. Astrologers would come. And Prabhupada did pursue it to some extent. But then it's like on one hand he was having astrologers, but then on the other hand, he would just dismiss it all. So almost upon his mood, it would seem. In one astrologer, they told Prabhupada that they should do Mritunjay Jaya. Mritunjay means Lord Shiva. So Prabhupada didn't do that. With this Nrisimha Yajna, Nrisimha Homa, should we just chant Hare Krishna? Probably yes, and probably not good to encourage people to do all kinds of yajnas. One thing I remember, you know, I don't encourage my disciples to wear these Nrisimha kavachas. We're chanting Hare Krishna. We're putting on tilak, was it? Gopi Chand, that's a kavacha. But there was one case where one disciple of mine, I saw she was wearing this. And I said, why take this? So it's not something that Prabhupada gave. And she was living in the temple there in Ireland, which is full of ghosts. And she said, actually after taking this, it made a big difference. So I couldn't get any sleep because of disturbance from ghosts. But after this, there was no problem. So it may be in some cases. When Murari Gupta Prabhu, his first child, was diagnosed that he has no kidneys, so as soon as he comes out of the womb, he's going to die. So I had, his wife, I told her to chant daily this, the Shringa Kavacha, for the child. He didn't expect the child to live, and he didn't. Came out of the womb and died. But for the protection of the soul of the child, Nrisimha Kavacha, you chanted, not Mritunjaya Japa. So maybe, there may be some case for it. And this is the, this is the way in which the Lord has allowed himself to be approached for certain, for asking him to intercede in our material situation. So it's not outside the scope of Vaishnavism. But at the same time, we should be careful that we don't get into this kind of karma kandya mood, where for every little thing we are having this yagya, that yagya. Better to have Harinam yagya. I personally, as you may know, had this done for me, after this Nrisimha Homa, for my health, with this sankalpa that, so that I may better serve Krishna. Because I've been to so many doctors for so many years, and my, no change in my health situation, which I would prefer would improve so that I could serve Krishna better. And as I was told by the astrologer who recommended me to do this, after going through, looking astrologically for so many things, he went through so many things that might help. And this is the only one that came up. And he said it's actually included, it's accepted as part of Ayurveda to do this. So I did it. And anyway, let's see. But it's not, I wouldn't recommend for everyone. Maybe I shouldn't have done because it'll set an example for others. That's also a consideration, which I didn't think of at the time. One thing also, that doing yagyas and having intensive Ayurvedic treatment, traditionally that wasn't for everyone. That would be for Rajas, not for everyone. The Raja is very important to the whole of society. So, and he can afford also all these expensive treatments. Not that everyone would do that. Some simple things they would do, but there's very intensive treatments and especially expensive medicine. It's not that everyone would do that. So again, not exactly a black and white answer. There may be some grounds for this. You say, what's the procedures in Hari Bhakti Vilasan Shat Kriya Sara Deepika? Yeah, we can follow those. You'll have to see. Again, we can see seeing the example of Srila Prabhupada will be very helpful for us in all of this. Because exactly how do we follow? Prabhupada had massage every day. Sannyasi, we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected the idea. He said, well, some oil was brought for rubbing on, he said, next thing you're going to keep a masseur for me. Sannyasi, but Prabhupada took it. It maintained, after he had a stroke, then he took that every day, and by doing that, his spiritual body, which was operating within the material world, was able, his spiritualized body, he's able to travel all over the world and preach Krishna consciousness. So it's good he had him as